Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. The election is in just 60 days. North Carolina will begin mailing absentee ballots this Friday. If you are planning to vote by mail, be sure to do it early so it arrives on time and is counted. And be sure to check your voter registration at vote.org, especially if you live in a Republican-controlled state. On today's Your Call, we will get the latest on GOP voter suppression lawsuits in Arizona, Michigan, Nevada, and North Carolina. We begin with Texas, which is now a majority-minority state. Latinos, African Americans, and Asian Americans make up 58% of the population, according to LULAC, the League of United Latin American Citizens. Last week, 87-year-old Texas LULAC volunteer Lydia Martin woke up to 9 armed officers at her door sent by Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton. Lydia Martinez has spent 35 years working with LULAC. She helps Latinos register to vote, mainly elders and veterans. She also ensures people are still on the voting rolls. Here is Lydia Martinez speaking at a press conference.
I was in my nightgown and I thought it was my next door neighbor. And I went to the door and 9 officers from the Attorney General's office walked in. And they had a search warrant, and they told me that they were there because I had filed a complaint that seniors were not getting their mail ballots. And I said, yes, I did. And he says, do you have the names? And I said, I have a few of the names. And they came in, and I said, can I get dressed? They didn't let me. They set me down, and they started searching all my house. My storeroom, my garage, my kitchen, everything. And after 2 hours of questioning, they took me outside in front of all my neighbors and all the officers around me. And for half an hour while they searched the living room where I had been sitting, and after half an hour, they let me go back in the house, and they continued the questioning asking me about LULAC members in particular. And I told him, why are you all doing this? And he said, because there was fraud.
That is 87-year-old LULAC volunteer Lydia Martinez, who has been working with the organization, registering people to vote and doing so much community activism in Texas for 35 years. Officers also entered and searched the homes of other Latino leaders and LULAC members. Almost 40 officers armed with AK-47s wearing SWAT gear entered the home of Manuel Medina, chief of staff for San Antonio Democratic State Representative Elizabeth Campos. He and his family were held and interrogated for over 7 hours. He has 2 young daughters. This is according to LULAC. Officers took cell phones, laptops, and documents. The warrants were granted as part of Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton's ongoing election fraud probe. Extensive research has found that voter fraud is very, very rare. LULAC has filed a former complaint with the Department of Justice and is working with several civil rights organizations and members of Congress to push for a thorough investigation. Joining us is Juan Proaño, the CEO of LULAC, the country's largest and oldest Latino civil rights group. LULAC has also launched a Know Your Rights campaign to empower individuals to protect themselves when law enforcement comes knocking and to recognize and combat voter suppression and intimidation. They've also assembled a team of pro bono attorneys who are ready to defend the voting rights of Latinos across the country. Hi, Juan. Thank you so much for joining us.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
We're also joined by Matt Cohen, senior staff writer at Democracy Docket, an online news platform dedicated to information, analysis, and opinion about voting rights and election litigation. Matt has written about voter suppression efforts in Texas, Arizona, Montana, North Carolina, and elsewhere. Hi, Matt. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, Rose. Thanks for having me.
Well, great to have both of you. Before we dive in and talk about what happened in Texas, I want to ask you both a big question, but I think it's really important. What is at stake in this election? Juan, for the very first time in LULAC's 95-year history, you all have decided to endorse someone for president, and that is Kamala Harris. So first off, why did LULAC decide to break with that tradition and endorse Harris? And can you talk about what is at stake in this election?
Sure. You know, the endorsement, didn't come easily for us. You know, we are a bipartisan organization, but it is a discussion that we've had over the last 4 years and more so over the last year. But we came to it with the understanding that this wasn't your typical election. You know, we survived, if you will, a Trump presidency where he had demands of closing the border, separation of families. And then as we watched the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee on that Tuesday, we saw them bringing out, you know, mass deportation signs. Those signs, somebody thought about those signs, they designed those signs, they printed those signs, they delivered those signs, they got them out to thousands of people. And their message being that they were going to deport up to 15 million immigrants from this country. And so it was clear that LULAC could not stand by as an advocate for the Latino community and not say anything. And so that really was one of the key drivers in making that endorsement.
Do you think that that issue is getting enough media attention, that Trump's plan to deport millions of people potentially?
Yeah, I mean, certainly Project 2025 has, you know, been the thing that everyone is talking about. And there are a lot of things, and LULAC actually published an analysis for through a Latino lens of the different ways it would essentially impact the Latino community. But no, I don't believe that the deportations piece has gotten enough attention. Because, you know, you're talking about immigrants that have been in this country 10, 20, 30 years, who've married U.S. citizens, who have bought homes, who have children who are U.S. citizens. And imagine even if they deported 1 million of those, you know, what that would do to our economy, what would that would do to Latino families really across the country. There are so many things that would essentially come from that. And so that's why LULAC took the position that it did.
And Juan, would you like to add anything else about what is at stake, given that the election is only 60 days away?
Yeah, I mean, you know, our expectation is that, you know, if Trump were to be in office within hours, we know that he would have executive orders to close down the border again. I think he would follow through on his promise to, you know, do mass deportations, to do away with birthright citizenship. So certainly when it comes to the Latino community, there is a lot at stake in this election.
Matt, in addition to covering voter suppression and voting rights, you have also covered far-right extremism and dark money. What would you say is at stake in this upcoming election?
Well, to begin, I want to second what Juan said. The first Trump administration was a disaster for immigration policy, and every indication that Trump and his acolytes have given is that it's going to be worse. But, you know, from my perspective, this phrase gets thrown around a lot, but I think it does for a reason, an important reason. Democracy is at stake. It's not just the rights of people who have come to this country and are living here, but the civil rights and voting rights of millions and millions of people. I think what is happening in Texas is just a microcosm of the sort of multi-prong assault on the rights of millions of people to basically exist in this country. And, you know, Juan mentioned Project 2025. I think that's a really great example of kind of what's on the line for this election. It's almost every facet of government. And, you know, from my perspective, covering the far right and dark money, you know, it really feels like this moment is kind of the culmination of seeds that have been planted almost decades ago, back to the Reagan administration, by you know, kind of cultivating the careers and especially in the courts justices who would adhere to a very Christian nationalist, fundamentalist reading of the Constitution. And so you have all of these kind of chess pieces in place to kind of make the things that are in Project 2025 actually come to fruition. And I think, you know, to me, that is what I think about when people say, you know, democracy is on the line for this election.
And we've been doing a series about Project 2025. You can find it online at kalw.org, click news, and then your call. That is Matt Cohen, senior staff writer at Democracy Docket. We're also joined by Juan Proano, the CEO of LULAC, the country's largest and oldest Latino civil rights group. Juan, what we're learning about the armed raids that happened in Texas last week are very disturbing. Can you give us some context before we talk specifics? According to the press release LULAC put out, Attorney General Ken Paxton of Texas has been aggressively targeting and harassing Latino-led organizations such as LULAC, as well as individual citizens. So for those of us who have not been following what's happening in Texas, can you give us the broader context?
Sure. And it's not just LULAC, actually. You know, we have uncovered essentially what is a pattern. So he first sued the Annunciation House, which is an organization that provides services for immigrants coming into this country. He then sued the Catholic Charities of Rio Grande Valley and Sister Norma Pimentel, trying to compel her to actually provide testimony relative to the work that they do. And then a week and a half ago, almost 2 weeks ago now, he sued another 12 Latino nonprofit organizations, essentially using a business tort law, accusing them of using C3 funding to do electioneering work and to help support illegal immigrants in this country, none of which are true. And then last week, going after Latino leaders, literally Latino candidates in districts that I would say are toss-up districts, and then after LULAC members. And so it's a pattern here, and this is in addition to his long history of being an election denier, his long history of being anti-immigrant, against border reform. So it plays very much into the type of person that he is and the type of prosecutional oversight that he has had. It's very anti-Latino.
It's also important to note that the demographics in Texas are drastically changing. Latinos represent just over 40% of the population, the largest ethnic group in Texas. As a majority minority state, with Latinos, African Americans, and Asian Americans making up 58% of the population, you all at LULAC say these raids are having a chilling effect on civic participation within these communities. This underscores a broader, more concerning strategy aimed at suppressing minority voices. This is really important to talk about, Juan. Can you talk about the changing demographic in Texas and how Republicans are responding to what that might mean for the vote in Texas?
Yeah, I mean, you know, clearly, you know, Republicans control the House and the Senate there, you know, courts, the local and district court, all the way up to the circuit court. And so it's very difficult for Latinos to actually find any relief, if you will, through the court system there. But it's no different than, you know, California or New Mexico or Arizona that have a large growing Latino population. I think it's important for us to be able to tease out the fact that, you know, over 76% of that Latino growth comes from Latinos that are basically born in the United States. The other 24% comes from Latinos that essentially are naturalized as well. So there's this fallacy that that these are Latino immigrants that are coming into this country to basically vote illegally. We certainly don't believe that at all. But we do know that we do have to reckon with immigration reform, both at the border and also in the interior of this country.
And there's so much at stake, obviously, in Texas. I was just reading a piece a couple days ago by Laura Bassett in The Guardian, how Ted Cruz's abortion record could cost him an historic election in Texas. He's a number of Democrats have run against Ted Cruz, and they've come close, but they haven't beat him. But this time around, Colin Allred might beat him. So there is so much at stake. Can you talk more about that? And is this why you think Paxton is increasing efforts to suppress the vote and sending armed guards into the homes of people like 87-year-old Lydia Martinez?
It is a, you know, it's important to note that he has been completely silent. Senator Cruz has been completely silent on these raids. I would imagine that anyone would be concerned when you have the Attorney General barging into senior citizens' homes, conducting these raids. So for me, it really is clear that, you know, that he either doesn't care about Latinos, he doesn't care about Latina grandmothers, but his silence is really spoken loudly.
So I'm trying to figure out, I haven't been able to read any quotes from people who support these raids. So thinking about their argument, they're basically saying that these people are committing voter fraud, and therefore they need to send in some cases, armed officers wearing tactical gear and interrogating people for hours and then taking their laptops and their phones and, in some cases, voting information. That's the argument here, that these people are committing fraud?
That's essentially the argument, and they claim to have evidence, but we have not seen any of that evidence. There have been, you know, I think he's actually tried to prosecute three different cases. One of them where he did get a conviction was essentially overturned. There is nothing there, and their announcement that they were purging 1.1 million voters from their voter rolls really undercuts the entire argument that they make. Of those 1.1 million, over 457,000 were deceased. 463 were classified and put on a suspense list, but only 6,500 were of non-citizens, and only 1,900 of those 6,500 actually had any voting history. So you're talking about less than half of a percent of those 1.1 million are of non-citizens, less than 1/1,000 of a percent actually have any voting history. And what they don't clarify is how many of those are actually naturalized citizens who actually do have the right to vote, but their voter files have not been updated properly.
The Brennan Center for Justice has pieces about how non-citizen voting is already illegal and vanishingly rare. And then they also have a piece about how voter fraud is extremely, extremely rare. What can you tell us about how this was carried out? I mean, to think about Lydia Martinez, who is 87 years old and so what sounds like an incredible community activist, volunteering, helping veterans, working at various community organizations, and then registering people to vote. And she's got 9 armed officers at her door in the early morning. What really strikes you about what happened to Lydia and other Latinos and LULAC members in Texas last week?
Just the callousness and the complete disregard for who these people are. I mean, they're U.S. citizens. And not only does Lydia volunteer her time at these nonprofit organizations, her 5 brothers all served in the military. One of her brothers actually died in the Vietnam War and received the Silver Star, which is why she does so much work with veterans organizations as well. And so, you know, 6 a.m. in the morning, you get a knock on your door. In one case, they broke the door down with a battering ram and had 40 police officers in tactical gear and SWAT gear, for example. And even in a few, we don't even know if they provided due notice, meaning they didn't even leave behind the warrants, right? Mm-hmm. You know, the LULAC members complied with the request, gave them the phones, gave them the computers. And then after the fact, you know, we're like, who are you? Well, why are you here? Because they really weren't clear on what their rights were. Since they were not conducting an arrest, they were not read their Miranda rights. And so some of these folks really didn't understand what was going on at the time.
Have you been in touch with Lydia since this happened?
Every day.
How is she doing?
Yeah, she was afraid, and her family, you know, has been afraid for her. They're afraid that she's going to go to jail. You know, they've asked her to stop, but that fear is slowly turning into resolve, is turning into a commitment to continuing to do the work that she's doing. And she's received a lot of support from the community. We've helped her get legal counsel. We helped her get a new computer so she can get back online. You know, she is, you know, in her words, they messed with the wrong grandmother, you know, which was you know, pretty incredible for her to be able to say that at this point.
How many people were targeted?
We believe that it was 12. As many as 12. We've talked to 7 that received warrants and their homes are searched.
And is this legal?
You know, that's an interesting point. You know, we actually did talk with legal counsel and even it was one of the questions that we had asked the DOJ. So long as the warrants were signed by a judge, it is legal. Clearly, the judge did not read those warrants. They basically said he had a stack of warrants and he just signed them all. But an interesting twist of fate, the judge that signed that warrant is actually knew Lydia. And they know each other because they've been in the community for a very long time. Mm. And so, you know, that has now moved on to another judge that will oversee this case. But I think that there's certainly a lot of remorse in the fact that these warrants were even issued to begin with.
These armed officers took cell phones, laptops, important documents. Have those been returned?
They have not. They have not. You know, in the case of Lydia, she was compelled to provide her username and password. They're basically saying that it would take longer for her to get them back, that they would mail them back. But even in the warrants, as I read through it, I mean, they essentially had the authority to get her fingerprints, use her eyes to, you know, to do a retinal scan to open up the devices. Wow. I mean, I was just shocked about, you know, what they actually had in those warrants to compel her to be able to turn them over.
Oh my
so they could get full access to it.
What were these people charged with?
Charged with anything. They weren't charged with anything. They haven't been charged with anything yet, even today.
This is really incredible. I have not heard of the eye scan. So she gave her eye scan, her fingerprints, her laptop, charges.
That was in the warrant. And so they told her that she should just provide them with the username and passwords, which she did. But they did have full authority, according to those warrants, to be able to get fingerprints and to be able to get retinal scans and anything that they could use to open up those devices.
Oh my goodness. And to think in the year 2024, Juan, at LULAC, you all had to put out a Know Your Rights campaign to let people know what to do if law enforcement comes knocking. And we're talking about people who register their neighbors and veterans and others to vote. This is what you should do if law enforcement comes knocking.
Yeah, I mean, you know, she had a Ring camera. We're trying to get the information from the Ring camera, but she could not access it because they took her phone and her computer, which is where she had the login credentials to access that information. It wasn't a paid account. So, you know, even I've gone through, you know, my Ring account to make sure that I'm paying, to make sure that I have, you know, recorded videos for an extended period of time. But it really does make you think, what would happen if this was you or any one of us. But, you know, they haven't done any search warrants on any other communities. It's only Latinos that have actually been targeted here. No African-Americans, no Asians, no non-Hispanic whites have been targeted. It is only Latinos.
We have to do many more shows about this. I was just searching for Ken Paxton to see what's going on with other media coverage about him. I just want to read three pieces. The Washington Post, this was yesterday. New Paxton lawsuit targets mail-in voter registrations in Texas's Bexar County. Paxton filed a lawsuit against one of the state's largest urban counties to stop lawmakers there from using taxpayer dollars to mail thousands of voter registration applicants to its unregistered residents. So there's that one. The New York Times has one similar. We're talking about San Antonio here. And then here's another one from the Dallas Morning News. This is yesterday. UNT professors, the University of North Texas, can no longer have student-led voter registration groups in classes, as university officials point to a 1993 law that prohibits state officers from interfering with elections. Some professors at the University of North Texas note that they have had such groups in their classes several times over the past two decades. Juan, this comes at a time when voter registration is so high. The number of people who registered after Biden stepped down and we learned that Kamala Harris would be on the Democrats' ticket. Voter registration is so high now, especially among women. And this also applies to Texas.
Well, more than 50% of new voter registrations since 2020 are actually Latino to begin with. But we believe that, you know, Texas is essentially a testing ground. It's a testing ground for Republicans and conservatives to see what they can get away with. And then they can replicate this in other states across the country. And so our message to the DOJ is, if you do not take this on head on now, we will have 100 other cases like this around the country in the years to come. So we're hoping that they will have a forceful response.
Are people talking about Texas? People have been talking about Texas turning blue for years, but is that what's going on here also?
I mean, we certainly see a shift, and there's obviously a lot of enthusiasm within the Harris and Walz campaign. I don't know if Texas is going to go blue this year, but there certainly are enough 50-50 districts that we should be able to pick up a couple of seats in the House and in the Senate there. Mm.
Well, Juan, thank you for joining us, and we'd love to have you back to continue following the story. Juan Proaño is the CEO of LULAC, the country's largest and oldest Latino civil rights group. They launched a Know Your Rights campaign to empower individuals to protect themselves if law enforcement comes knocking. Thank you so much for your time, Juan.
Thank you, Rose. Thank you, Matt. A pleasure.
And a few things that it says on the Know Your Rights campaign: ask to see the judicial warrant, which can be slid under your door. It must have your correct name and address and be signed by a judge. If the document doesn't have that information, say that you do not authorize their entrance and you'll call your attorney. You also have the right to remain silent. Remain silent until you speak with your attorney. Anything you say can be used against you. Do not answer any questions or get information like, which country are you from? Only say, I want to speak to my lawyer. Remain calm and respectful. Do not sign any documents that you do not understand. This is from LULAC's Know Your Rights campaign. Coming up after a break, we will ask Matt Cohen to weigh in on all of this and to find out if this is happening anywhere else in the country. Matt is a senior staff writer at Democracy Docket. He writes about voter suppression efforts across the country. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. The election is in just 60 days. We'd love to hear from you about how you'd like us to cover the election with so much at stake. You can email yourcall@kalw.org. Tomorrow, we'll discuss a ProPublica investigation, how Telegram became the center of gravity for a new breed of domestic terrorists. We'll also discuss media coverage of abortion. Since the Dobbs decision, 14 states have enacted total abortion bans, 14 Republican-controlled states. Today, we are talking about voter suppression in Republican-controlled states. Be sure to check your voter registration and spread the word. You can easily do it at vote.org. We're joined by Matt Cohen, senior staff writer at Democracy Docket. He writes about voter suppression efforts across the country. And if you'd like to join us, if you have any questions about voter suppression and what you just heard there from Juan Proaño, the CEO of LULAC, have you heard about what is happening in Texas? You can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email yourcall@kalw.org. Matt, what are your thoughts on this? It is shocking to learn. I have not read this anywhere, that one of the LULAC members, 87-year-old Lydia Martinez, a longtime volunteer, gave over her iris ID to law enforcement, along with her computer and other items that they have not returned yet.
Yeah, I was sitting here listening as a guest as you were, Rose, about that. I'd obviously heard about the story, but I didn't know the level of details. I've never heard of anything like this. It's absolutely outrageous and quite frankly, a pretty disgusting abuse of power. I just can't imagine for something that's not even, they're not even being charged with anything, just part of this investigation, a warrant that was kind of callously signed to send in, send in armed officials to demand all of this is just, it's a new level of voter intimidation tactics that I think Juan made a really good point is something that it seems like Texas is Republicans are testing the waters to see if they can get away with.
It's incredible. Eye scans of an 87-year-old. And then also, Lydia, it seems to me, based on the media coverage, she's the only one who's talking. But then there's Manuel Medina. He's got two young daughters. 40 officers armed with AK-47s and SWAT gear entered his home and interrogated him and his family for over 7 hours. Now, I wonder, Matt, when this happened, it got media attention, lots of local TV coverage, not only in Texas, but across the country. But I'm kind of surprised that we're not hearing more about this, given that, or at least it hasn't continued, given that, in at least in Lydia's case, who knows about the other 12, if they also gave eye scans. What does this mean? Why is this happening? They weren't charged. Is Texas going to continue doing this? I mean, what are your thoughts about ongoing coverage of this?
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, I think this is one of those things that people are starting to really, the full details are trickling out. And I think there's going to be a lot more coverage about this. You know, I think one of the big things, at least from my perspective as a reporter, there is so much voter suppression tactics going around that throughout the country that it is often overwhelming to sort of be on top of a lot of that stuff. But I think, you know, given that when things like this happen, it may be slow to kind of rise to the national reporting level. But, I think like we just heard, those details are so shocking. There's no way I could kind of see a lot of reporters scrambling now to kind of retroactively, see what happened. How did it lead to this? And I think that is, same thing kind of happened with Project 2025. A lot of that reporting, you know, that was out for a while before it really a lot of the national media caught on to it. And I think, you know, I have a lot of thoughts and theories as to why that is. The media isn't exactly in the healthiest of places right now, so a lot of people are struggling to keep up with everything. But I do think, you know, this story is something that's absolutely going to be a big deal, and I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, within a week's time, we're going to start hearing, not just the media, but a lot of Democrats really like raising alarm bells about what happened here.
One more question about Texas, because this is so important. The New Republic mm-hmm. has a piece out called "Ken Paxton Threatens to Block Democrats from Registering to Vote." And they talk about him threatening legal action in Bexar and Harris counties if volunteers and organizations proceed with sending out mail-in voter registration forms, which the counties have proposed doing via third-party vendors. Okay, so this sounds like it's an official exercise here. Paxton argues that it can encourage non-citizens to register to vote. Again, the Brennan Center says this is extremely rare. Bexar and Harris are urban and populous and have a majority or even plurality of Latino voters, according to The Hill. In 2020, both counties overwhelmingly voted for Joe Biden. So what are your thoughts about this, Matt? Why is Paxton doing this in a state like Texas? And again, the demographics are changing. According to LULAC, Latinos, African Americans, and Asian Americans now make up almost 60% of the population.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, we have a combination of things happening here. Like you mentioned, like Juan mentioned, the demographics are changing. And then coupled with the fact that the Democratic ticket shook up midway through the election campaign and really gave all of this surge of support and energy for the Harris-Walz ticket, I think that is leaving a lot of Republicans scrambling. And the thing that, you know, Republicans love to do, especially when it comes to elections, and especially when it's a close election, things aren't going that way, they start to see how they can look at the sort of the gray or vague areas of various state and national voting laws to see where they can kind of manipulate those gray areas to their benefit, how they can kind of interpret some vague state statutes, or even not vague, but statutes that were, you know, enacted by Republican leadership to their advantage. You know, this is when we talk a lot about how, you know, the Republicans love to basically pass laws and enact rules and laws that give them an unfair advantage. It often comes in the form of voting laws. And so what you see here is basically a brazen and naked attempt to kind of use the law to Republicans' advantage to disenfranchise Democratic voters, and not just Democratic voters, like you said, but you know, Latino voters, voters from more of the most vulnerable and underrepresented populations.
Well, to that point, Texas recently removed 1 million people from the voter rolls. According to The Hill, Texas Governor Greg Abbott says the people who were removed were non-citizens, deceased voters, and people who moved to another state. But critics say it disproportionately affects voters of color and voters with disabilities. What is really going on here?
Yeah. So, you know, I mean, I think there are a few things. You brought up that Brennan Center report, which I think is a very important report, and a stat that doesn't get repeated enough, is that the instances of voter fraud are extremely rare, and instances of non-citizen voting is also very rare. One thing that is what's happening right now all throughout the country from the right, and it started, I would say, maybe I think it was about March or April, where House Speaker Mike Johnson went to Mar-a-Lago to join Donald Trump in this press conference, where they basically said they're introducing this federal bill to ban non-citizens from voting, which is already illegal. It is not happening. And that sort of started this new sort of misinformation campaign, or disinformation campaign, if you will, from the right to perpetuate this myth that non-citizens are voting. And kind of what's that leading to now is this perception that there is mass voter fraud. And, you know, a lot of the removal of people from voter rolls, like you mentioned, is a routine maintenance procedure that happens in every district across the country. You know, county registrars, election officials, this is what they do. And studies and analysis have shown is that they're very effective of it, that they go through all the voter rolls and they remove the people that by law should not be on there, whether they are deceased, they've moved, or they're not registered citizens. So basically what we're seeing now is a lot of right wing just kind of chest puffing and disinformation about procedures that are routine and happen regularly. And so now we have all this attention on these regular routines, and people are taking a lot of these procedures, not fully understanding how they work, and trying to exploit that for their own sort of partisan political advantages.
We are talking about voter suppression efforts across the country with Matt Cohen, senior staff writer at Democracy Docket. He writes about voter suppression efforts in many, many states. Matt, just in the last few weeks, you've written a lot of articles. I'll just read from a few headlines. Right-wing group drops lawsuit challenging Nevada County's voter rolls. Arizona Republicans sue governor over pro-voting executive orders. Montana Republicans ask the Supreme Court to uphold voter suppression laws. United Sovereign Americans lawsuit targets Texas voter rolls, asks the court to block certification. America First Legal sues to remove voters from every Arizona county. There's so much going on. What would you say concerns you the most right now?
Well, you know, I think with all of these concerning legal actions, there's something, a bit of positivity is that we do have a lot of mechanisms in place, and as it's being shown, you know, those mechanisms are holding despite this assault on kind of voting rights. But at the same time, the thing that really concerns me is that there is just this massive, legal assault on voting rights, trying to remove voters from voting, voter registration rolls, challenging the different election procedures. And, you know, at Democracy Docket, we track all this litigation and we keep tabs on the stats. And, you know, I can say with confidence that a lot of these brazen attempts in the courts from the right aren't successful. But what they're doing is it's sort of presenting an opportunity to spread disinformation through the courts, which sort of gives it this air of legitimacy. A lot of these groups, especially the high profile ones like America First Legal, which is founded by Stephen Miller, former Trump advisor, and America First Policy Institute, which is another legal group formed by a bunch of former Trump admin officials, you know, by filing these lawsuits, and you know, I've read a lot of them, and they contain just some of the most brazen kind of conspiracy theories and misinformation, and a lot of them do get tossed out by judges, and they cite that. But at the same time, you know, now that information exists in a legal setting where they can kind of use that to tout its legitimacy, and it's sowing distrust and discord in the election process through people on the right and people who are, you know, maybe independent. Maybe they're you know, they don't really like Trump, but they also don't really like Democrats. They don't really know who to believe. They don't really know if these election fraud allegations are BS or not. And so what you're having is, rather than where all of this kind of disinformation lived before, which was on the fringe, being spouted from far right kind of media personalities like Alex Jones and whatnot that no one kind of really took seriously. Now it exists in a court document and exists in a way for people to see it as a little bit more legitimate. And that is what is really concerning to me.
How do you think this is going to affect people in the next couple of months? Because I'm reading right now from News Nation, voter registration surged 700% after Biden announced he would not seek re-election. This is according to Andrea Haley of Vote.org. She says 40,000 new voters registered within 48 hours of Biden's announcement. We particularly saw spikes among young people. Most of the registrations were ages 18 to 34, and she noted significant registration increases in key swing states, including Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, and Wisconsin. By the end of the week, Vote.org recorded more than 142,000 new registrations nationwide. And because of the Electoral College, 10,000 votes here and 10,000 votes there really makes a difference. So if we've got 142,000 new registrations nationwide, and then these voter suppression efforts, what do you think is going to happen in the coming weeks? And what should people do to make sure that they're not a target of these efforts?
So I think, you know, there are a few things that I'd like to note is that, you know, I think those stats are incredible. And I don't think that these suppression efforts from the right are going to deter people from going to the polls or voting absentee. I think those are stats that show definitively that people are fired up to vote and they're going to do it no matter what. I think the thing that's I'm most concerned about and what, you know, me and my colleagues at Democracy Docket are really preparing for is what's going to happen in the weeks leading up to the election and after the election, where there's going to be an onslaught of legal challenges over the election results. There are going to be, and we're already kind of seeing it with election officials in different counties who in recent years or have said recently that, you know, they're not going to certify the election in their county if they think, you know, there's fraud or whatnot. You know, one of the most effective things that the right has done, not just recently, but, you know, they've kind of been really effective at this dating all the way back to like the Reagan administration is promoting and fostering grassroots activists to get involved in on the civic level in their communities. So, you know, I'm thinking of like the number of different election deniers who are in positions of local, state and local election officials where, you know, if they decide that the results of the election aren't what they want them to be, they're going to start figuring out what they can do to reverse those decisions, whether or not there's conclusive evidence of whatever, you know, fraud that they allege there is. It's what happened in 2020 and to an extent in 2022. And so, you know, I think that is the thing that's most concerning is the legal challenges that are about to kind of hit us like a tidal wave. And you know, I think that is something that as concerning as that is, as we saw both in 2020 and 2022, the legal system prevailed, despite that massive kind of legal hit from the right. The rightful winner of the 2020 election and winners of 2022 midterms, they took office, and I think we have to have trust in that system to work. It might take a little bit of time, which you know, people don't want to hear, but there it's going to be you know, a really hard fought kind of post-election season is what I'm kind of thinking about.
Thinking about what election officials are going through, NBC had a piece recently called Local Georgia Officials Equip Election Workers with Panic Buttons to Combat Rising Threats. Cobb County, Georgia approved nearly $50,000 to purchase the devices, which allow poll workers to quickly alert authorities in emergencies ahead of the presidential election. I mean, we've heard so many stories about threats to election workers and how they're afraid to just do their jobs. So they're under a lot of stress. And then do you think that the system is going to be able to hold out this time given what happened last time?
You know, I mean, I can't say for sure. I choose to be optimistic and say that yes. I mean, I think, you know, last time we witnessed an unprecedented attack on the Capitol, kind of one of the largest examples of political violence in modern history. You know, I think that law enforcement, Department of Justice is absolutely understands the level of threats and the how terse the climate is for political violence, and especially the threats and harassment against election officials. And I have seen examples, particularly in Michigan and Arizona, where, you know, The secretaries of state there are really training election officials to kind of be prepared for the worst and working with law enforcement for that. So I do think that there is a level of preparedness, unlike there was last time. And, you know, only time will tell how prepared a lot of these local authorities and Department of Justice is for that. But it does seem from my point of view that no one is taking these threats lightly, and that it is, absolutely a main priority for all of these election officials.
Matt, we have about a minute left. What are you currently working on right now? Where are you watching?
Yeah, so I kind of mentioned this a little bit, but the thing that I'm working on, and I should have some stories out later this month and next about this, is election deniers who are in positions of power in election official roles in certain swing states, and those people who sort of subscribe to these conspiracy theories, who are running for down ballot state and local races. I think as we've seen recently, people getting involved in their communities is a great thing. But when people kind of do that with ill intentions, it can really screw up the whole process from the ground up. And so that is something that I'm really keeping my eye on. People in local communities who might have an eye for trying to disrupt the election through their positions. And I think that's something that, people really need to be aware of.
Yes, and we will look for that article. Matt Cohen, senior staff writer at Democracy Docket, an online news platform dedicated to news about voting rights and election litigation. Matt writes about voter suppression across the country. Thank you for your work, Matt, and thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me on again, Rose. It was a real pleasure.
Thanks so much. And be sure to check your voter registration at vote.org. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.